I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Actress Kate Flannery is best known for playing Meredith Palmer, the slutty, boozing, accident-prone slacker on The Office, which just ended its 9-season run on NBC. It was about a completely dysfunctional paper company in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and had many loyal fans, myself included. The show had a rough start and went on to win 4 Emmys and a Golden Globe. Kate Flannery was born and raised in Philadelphia and Ardmore and is appearing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the Suzanne Roberts Theater through July 7th. It's a production of the Philadelphia Theater Company. It's also a collection of stories by Nora and Delia Ephron based on the book by Eileen Beckerman. Here's a clip from the show, Kate Flannery with a tale about getting fitted for a bra.
Someone gave me a cashmere halter top that needs a bra to make it work. So I go to the town shop on Broadway and tell the saleswoman, Marveline, my size. She immediately tells me I'm wrong. All you girls, you think you should be going up in inches. You should be going up a cup. I am deposited in something that is perhaps a dressing room, but looks more like a utility closet with a mirror and a case of paper towels. I am strapped into my strapless when the curtain is parted like the Red Sea, and my linebacker saleswoman commands me to bend over. So she then grabs me and my bra and hoists us up until I can feel the blood changing direction in my body. Then she reaches in, cups my breast with her bare hands, and shifts them. Then she invites all the other saleswomen in to look at me. Everyone cheers. And I look in the mirror and I realize I am a new woman.
Well, Kate Flannery was a member of Second City's National Touring Company, an original member of Chicago's Annoyance Theater, and is half of the comedy lounge act The Lampshades. And Kate Flannery, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
How are you?
I'm very well, and I had fun watching your face, listening to yourself. You do not have a poker face, I have to
say. It's one of the rings of hell listening to myself, I just have to say. And looking at myself is also, yes. But it's that's one of the things being an actor, right? I could always do it better, right? Can we get another take? Can we get another chance?
Is it different for you to be playing in Philadelphia, your hometown?
It is different, but it's great. It's you know, it's nice to be back. And I feel like every show is kind of like, this is your life, you know. Like, who's gonna show up today? Wow, somebody I haven't seen in 30 years. Oh my gosh.
And there they are sitting
there
in the
they room. Are
and you can see them
sometimes not till after, and then I go, oh my gosh, wow. But you know, Philadelphia is it was such a great place to start. So I'm really happy to be back.
And you've done this show, this play before.
Yes,
you did it what in New York?
I did it in New York about 2.5 years ago.
And is it nice to have a play where you don't have to learn your lines?
It's fantastic. It's the laziest actor job. Yeah, no, it's great. And I have to say, Nora Ephron and Delia, they really the words just, I mean, the stories, the connection that we make with this piece as actors and as audience members, I mean, it's definitely, it's a conversation. The audience is definitely part of that conversation. It's great.
Well, it's interesting to be in the audience, and I'm sure you've heard your fellow actors do these parts before, but you all are listening rather intently as the other performers are doing their parts.
Right. Well, the stories are so great, and everyone sort of brings their own spice to it. It's really great.
And do you care about what you wear? I mean, most women, myself included, it matters what we wear. Are you obsessive about that? Do you think about your neck, for instance? You're probably too young for that.
Yeah, I don't have too much vanity and sanity, but I do have some vanity and sanity. I think I've been a little bit of a, you know, trying to carve out my style. I've talked about, you know, my favorite piece of clothing. My dad had a bar in Germantown, and in the basement, for some reason, there was a pair of ski pants that were unworn from the 40s. And I fell in love with them. I was 13, and they were like my Annie Hall plug-in. So I got a vest and a shirt. You know, I was like, and I still have those pants. They still fit.
And they still fit you?
They still fit. Yeah, you know, they're like pleated gray wool, kind of classic, you know. I don't wear them as much as I used to, but they used to be my uniform.
You grew up in Philly and yes, also in Ardmore as well. As you said, your family had a bar.
Yeah, my dad, yeah, in Germantown. And it was my grandfather's before it was my dad's. So there's a lot of history there. And, you know, I mean, it was a big square bar. I remember going and running around that bar when you couldn't see over it. because I was too short. And the treat was to have, you know, some Slim Jims, maybe a pack of Jacks, you know, something. Yes, the off brand of or the local brand of Cheetos, you know.
And you also, you went to Catholic school here.
I did.
Were you a
good
student?
I was good in grade school. High school, I got a little, I don't know, I was a little verklempt. I don't know. I was smart, but I wasn't, I didn't apply myself as well. I think I had stars in my eyes or something.
Oh, really?
Well, I kept trying to get jobs at the local dinner theaters here.
At what age?
Like 13, 14. I was, you know, reading the paper and taking the bus over, or begging one of my sisters to drive me. And then when I was a senior in high school, I finally got a job at Riverfront Dinner Theater. I played Ursula in Bye Bye Birdie, and I had 8 shows a week and 2 matinees. It was fantastic.
And you were, what, a senior in high school?
I was a senior in high school. Yeah, that was as close as I was ever going to get to becoming a child star. On the cusp, not really. But good. It was good. It was a good experience.
And as you said, 12 years of Catholic school.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did that influence you, do you think?
You know, I feel like I am a cultural Catholic. Despite any issues I ever have with what's currently happening with the Catholic Church, I feel like there's something that I'm innately one of them. I always will be, and I really appreciate it. I think there's some really wonderful parts of that whole system that are still working. You know, and it's a community. It's a sense of community. My dad goes to Mass every day, and he has a very specific sense of ritual. I wish I had more of that. I think I have my own version of that, but I think, you know, I like to, you know, he still goes to the shrine every Monday in Cheltenham. I mean, he's really, you know, he's the real deal. He walks the walk. And, you know, you might think being a bar owner, that doesn't quite fit. But my dad owned the apartments above the bar. And
really?
A lot of these guys that lived up there, you know, he really looked after them and made sure that, you know, that they could, you know, that they had enough to eat and that they didn't get in too much trouble. And if they needed to work off the rent, we always had an alcoholic, you know, hanging around the house, putting up a shelf or scraping off the wallpaper. I mean, it was like, it was pretty fantastic, you know. And it was, you know, my dad, he knew how to be of service to people in his own specific, sometimes completely hilarious way.
Well, let me segue then from the bar and alcoholics to your character, Meredith Palmer. Did you fashion her on either stories from your dad's bar or people that you might have seen? And I know you waitress for
For a long time, yeah, and bartended, but mostly waitress. You know what? I feel like I don't know if the writers quite knew who Meredith was when we first started. And, you know, I talk a lot when we're getting food. And I think, I don't know. I don't know if my stories had anything to do with it. I think maybe it could have just been one of those sort of psychic, wonderful coincidences that sometimes happens when they just sort of find this great fit. And I think that's kind of what happened. I don't think it was definitely not on me. And believe me, the Office is a writer show. It's not like the actors don't go in and say, you know what? I need my life. Can I get all my airtime? Can you shoot me out on the side? None of that. It's like, it's really about like the work, and the work is the star. The piece is the star, not the actors.
Well, what's interesting is your character, Meredith, was not in the British version of The Office.
Right. Right.
So when you tried out, what did they tell you about Meredith?
Just that she was divorced and had a hysterectomy.
That's all you knew?
That was pretty much it. That was pretty much it, yeah. And I knew that there was going to be this birthday party episode, because that was the only thing that I read at the audition, when Michael Scott basically like roasts her instead of supports her at her birthday and, you know, kind of stops the party call with these horrible jokes.
And did you, I mean, once you read for that audition, what did you get the part right away?
Well, you know what? I had auditioned for the part of Jan for the pilot, and I didn't get it. Obviously, they went a completely different way with Laura Harden. And then I actually replaced someone from the pilot. And then I think, I don't even know how fleshed out that part was. But they had asked us to actually bring paperwork to actually, I feel like, I don't know if this is the words that they would use, but I feel like the cameras had the space to improvise. So they wanted us to sit at our desks all day, which is unusual.
It is.
But I was up for it. I mean, you know, having had, you know, improv training and just sort of like, you know, and any kind of theater work, it's like I thought that was a great game. So I brought address books and tax work. And
you did work?
I did. I read Ruth Gordon's very thick autobiography.
And did you play solitaire?
Our computers did not work at all then.
Oh.
So I did not play solitaire the first season, but I had a great time. And it was very interesting watching the process and kind of figuring out this whole, like watching them figure it out. And also just kind of understanding like that, you know, knowing that I replaced somebody, I was a little on edge myself, feeling like, well, you know, I hope this works out, but I understand that it might not. So, so it's kind of a nice big experiment. And no one knew how big the show was going to get. There was no, I mean, that first season was just, I think we were all just like kind of swimming with the sharks, not knowing who was going to get eaten.
And there was some question about whether The Office would continue or not, at least in the very beginning.
Well, we only shot, you know, 6 episodes is not a lot for a first season. And that's, it's kind of like a pat on the head, like, good luck, you know, here's the lifeboat, a few rations, hope you make it. But, you know, I knew Steve Carell at Second City. He was a much bigger star at Second City when we were there. He had his own sort of legendary thing that he did. And Steve had many, many pilots. And my boyfriend's an NBC photographer. And he used to say when he would go to work, shoot a pilot, if he saw Steve, he'd be like, uh-oh.
Oh, really?
I guess this isn't going to go because Steve had never got, none of his shows ever went until The Office. So, yeah, so it's been a very interesting process. And I, having been more of a theater person, I've learned so much about this process of working on a single camera TV show from the show. I mean, the greatest teachers ever. Come on. I mean, the best trial by fire ever.
What always struck me is Meredith always wore jumpers. And I think, that is the worst piece of clothing ever invented anybody.
Absolutely. I mean, she looks like a kindergarten teacher who just smells a little like booze. I had the most comfortable clothes, Earth shoes and those Bjorn Born shoes, comfy Clarks. I mean, really, I feel sorry for those Sex and the City gals. I had it so, and I knew I had it easy. I knew it was, and I had a place to sit. That's the thing. I wrote this little piece for the Huffington Post on our last day. I hope I'm not jumping too far.
No, go ahead.
How I talked about how great it is to actually work on a show and have a place to sit. It's a huge thing. Because sometimes you'll start to do a scene and there's a lot of people in the crew that are trying to fix things and you have to be there, but sometimes there's no place for you to be. Like you're standing there, but sometimes you're in the way and then you're not right in the way until we start. So you have to sort of, you know, so that whole setup of having everyone sort of having their place is such a gift. Just the psychology of it and knowing that you belong. And even if I didn't speak for 2 episodes, I had a place.
Nice.
Yeah. It was really, really fantastic metaphor. I always felt like there was kind of a fake non-hierarchy. I mean, we all know there's a hierarchy everywhere you work, but it was sort of treated as kind of this family, this kind of, you know, most favored nations thing, you know, and even if it was pretend, I appreciated it.
Well, the whole thing was pretend, wasn't it?
Right.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. Kate Flannery is our guest today on the show, and we've been talking about a role that she played for The Office, Meredith Palmer, and she's here in Philadelphia appearing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the Suzanne Roberts Theater, production of the Philadelphia Theater Company. In fact, a performance is today at 1 and at 7 o'clock. It runs through July 7th. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. On view June 27th through October 13th, Jennifer Bartlett, History of the Universe, Works 1970 to 2011, an unprecedented 40-year survey of an acclaimed American artist of the 20th century. Over the course of her 50-year career, Bartlett has become known for her process-oriented, abstract works that offer viewers challenging and inventive narratives. More information online at paafa.org.
This Week in This American Life, the truly incredible story of a guy who started a list of hundreds of Iraqis who needed to get out of their country. They were getting death threats. He was their only hope. And he was 26, living in his aunt's basement, had no idea what to do to help them. How he kind of succeeded spectacularly and failed spectacularly both at the same time this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, a scientist weighs in on the need for nuclear power.
Without an expanded commitment to nuclear energy, our chances of avoiding some of the most serious consequences of climate change are going to be much reduced.
That story and William Faulkner's words about Gettysburg, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with comic actress Kate Flannery, again here in Philadelphia, appearing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the Suzanne Roberts Theater through July 7th. She was born here in Philadelphia, the youngest of seven kids, showed an early interest in performing, sneaking out of school to go and at least audition and in certain instances perform in plays here in the Philadelphia area. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to play a pretty famous clip from The Office. This was the Casual Friday clip, but I have to say, you know, Meredith gets hit by a car, her hair is set on fire, she gets rabies, she gets head lice.
Yeah, lice.
A lot happens to this character.
Yeah, she can take it. She's a tough broad. Yeah.
How did you think about her? I mean, as she evolved over the seasons.
You know, I never was at offered anything that I was interested in everything that was offered. I thought everything they wrote was just like, yes, 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 absolutely. Come on. Yeah, bring it on.
She's a floozy.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, there's, and it's just so funny because I've met women who are proudly say, I'm the Meredith of my office. And I believe them. Because
well,
only the
Meredith has one.
Right. Every office has one. And only a Meredith would be actually proud to be a Meredith. Shameless.
Well, let me play a clip. And again, even though you can't see it because we're on the radio here, I think this clip actually works on the radio. And this is our guest, Kate Flannery, as Meredith Palmer. This is the fifth season of The Office. And Paul Lieberstein is Toby Flenderson, the HR manager, approaching Meredith about her choice of her Casual Friday outfit, a completely inappropriate short, strapless black dress. Meredith defends herself.
And it's purple, actually.
It's purple.
Oh, yeah.
Very important.
It's super purple. Yeah.
And Meredith does defend herself by both pulling her dress up and down to the horror of her coworkers. Let's listen.
Hey, Meredith. Can I talk to you privately for a second?
About what?
Your outfit.
What? What's wrong with my outfit?
You might consider pulling it down a touch. Trying up a little high.
Bunch of prudes. You know, Oscar's allowed to wear sandals, but I'm not allowed to wear open toed shoes. Is that how it goes?
Meredith, your boob is out.
Fine.
No.
Meredith, too far.
Damn it, Meredith. Where are your panties?
It's casual day. Happy?
No.
Toby.
I think those oh no's work really well on the radio, don't you think?
There's nothing like physical comedy on the radio. I do have a face for radio. I've been told that. Yeah, I think at the ending I was literally bending over the file cabinet.
You were,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, free show, everybody. Yeah, yeah. I love when like seventh graders or second graders come up and say, Casual Friday. There's really no end to the fan base of The Office.
And just how naked were you under that purple dress?
Let's just say there was talk of using a merkin.
What's
a merkin? A merkin is I guess it's a toupee for the
hair
down there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I learned something today.
Yeah, sorry to be the teacher. and yeah, it was obviously it's not HBO, so I was not completely devoid of anything, but it was not much. A little. What do they say? Moleskin? Moleskin, yeah. Because some of the joke is to sort of get a little of the skin, you know, just to sort of keep it as, yeah. Some of the cameramen were not, they didn't give me a lot of eye contact after we shot that day, let me just say.
But is that the scene that's sort of followed you in your career?
In some ways, yeah. Yeah, that's it's a classic, as they say. Yeah. It's a cross to bear, Marty. I'm just kidding.
But Meredith would often get half naked or show her breasts.
Right.
I just
think the construction of that scene is just so, I mean, it's just so perfectly revealed in the whole, oh my gosh.
Do you miss The Office? I mean, I think, as I said, I'm a fan and I miss it as well.
I'm a little in denial because normally I would be on a break right now. So I think it'll probably hit me more next month when we would normally go back. But yeah, it's very emotional because I'm so proud. I mean, it's so rare that, first of all, that you're on a show that actually people watch, that who know you, who actually care about you, who actually like what you're doing, because that doesn't happen a lot. And also the connection that the fans have made. I mean, I can't even tell you. We have the most supportive, slightly geeky, benevolent, benign in a good way. They can be a little aggressive, but like only out of like a heartfelt excitement, not out of some weird, you know, I mean, we have the greatest fans, really. It's fantastic. And of course, when I'm in Philadelphia, it's so nice to hear people from Scranton. I actually took a picture the other day with a family from Scranton with the name Palmer. And I said, I'm so sorry. I have ruined your family name. Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's fantastic. You know, there's such heart. I mean, I think that's the thing about The Office. The writing, not only was it so funny, but there was so much heart connection. And just, it's so rare for a comedy to actually be brave enough to really, really go there. Not in a fake injected way, but in a real way that actually moves people. So I'm really proud.
Have you ever worked in an actual office?
Very briefly. I worked at Chilton in Radnor, Pennsylvania. Yeah, my older sister Karen worked there. She had like a real job there. And I was in high school. And I worked there a little bit in college doing like computer programming. And there was like some guy who kept taking off his shoes and he had smelly feet and there's no windows. And of course, like the vending machine is all that's offered. And I think I did like surveys there too because it was not my thing. It's just not my thing. You know, I much preferred being in a restaurant because it was social and it was fast. People could actually come visit you. I mean, you know, I waitressed for a very long time up and through the first season of The Office.
And that was just because you weren't sure if The Office was going to take off?
I didn't know if it was going to happen. And also, I can't tell you how many times I'm like, this is it. I'm done waitressing. You know, it was when I first got hired at Second City. I remember quitting my restaurant job in Chicago thinking, woohoo! And then realizing, oh, wait a minute. I only get $60 a week? What? Not really reading the fine print, just sort of seeing the stars in my eyes. But, you know, and also just kind of after suffering, I slept on couches for a long time in New York because I did an off-Broadway show. We did a stage production of the movie Valley of the Dolls, which was a blast. And it had a big gay cult following, and I was the Patty Duke part. And we were told we were going to run forever. Liz Smith is like, the show will run forever. And something happened with the publicity, and then, you know, there was an article in Interview Magazine. I was on the ones to watch. And literally, like, the week that came out, they were closing the show, and I couldn't go back to my apartment in L.A. It was just, like, one of those where life just sort of takes a turn. And, you know, and luckily I was young enough and eager enough to just keep working and just got another job and, you know, still did my comedy. And but you know, I mean, it's not a punishment. That's why I always tell kids that are starting out in this business, that if you may have to work three jobs for a long, long time, and it doesn't mean that you're not talented, it doesn't mean you're not on the right track. It's part of following your dreams. It's really a privilege to follow your dreams. And when they actually come true, oh my God, I mean, really, if I get hit by a car tomorrow, I really can't complain. As my sister Susie would say, like, get hit by a tasty cake truck and then hopefully make a deal with it. No, I'm just kidding, for the family.
You are in Philadelphia, so you said, all right, that certainly works here.
Right.
Oh, I waitressed many years ago, and I've often thought that everyone should waiter or waitress. I know they're called servers or something now, but everyone should do that because you learn about the kitchen, you learn about the public, you learn about all sort of navigating these worlds within a restaurant or a bar.
It's very true. And actually, when I worked in my last restaurant job, I worked in Beverly Hills, and I waited on a lot of rich and famous people and a lot of producers. I would literally audition for something and then, you know, see the director. I'd be waiting on them. And
would they recognize you?
Sometimes. I'd have to sort of make peace with it. I remember actually after we finished the sixth episode of The Office, I was kind of waiting here, and what I love about Greg Daniels, our executive producer, the guy who's basically responsible for making the American version a hit, Greg saw me in the restaurant. And what I loved about him was that he completely ignored the fact that I was working there and that I was in a uniform. And he started talking about that episode where the healthcare episode where I had this whole conversation with Dwight about you know, a penis is different from a vagina, that whole conversation, which was all improvised. He's like, I'm fighting with the network. We're trying to get it in. I'm really hoping. And he just went right to the actor. He wasn't tripped up by where we were and that I
had a waitress uniform.
I had like orange juice stains on my shirt and I was in the weeds, you know. You know, because sometimes sometimes some people would have a little bit of like, oh, hi, are you okay? Like a little condescending, you know, people I had worked with in the past. And you know what? It's one of those things where it's like, if I had a problem with it, then I could, you know, but yeah, I don't know. Life is what it is. You have to make peace with what you get. And if, and I had to make a decision. If I if I only got to do my comedy act and had a flyer in my apron pocket and had to wait tables for the rest of my life, I made a decision. I was like, okay, I could live with that. I could live with that at a certain point. Like, okay, I could live with that.
Did you ever have waitress nightmares?
I still do. They started up
where
again.
They give you 17 tables and
yes.
And you can't find the
always.
Kitchen door. Those kinds of
always.
Nightmares.
Always. Yes. I'm in trouble.
And you're naked too. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they started again when I heard The Office was ending. I'm like, oh, these are back. Oh, boy. Woohoo.
But you probably won't be waitressing in the future or
Not in the plan.
Let me reintroduce you, and that's Kate Flannery, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We've been talking about Meredith Palmer, a character that she played in the NBC hit series The Office. And again, she's here in Philadelphia performing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore. It's a five-woman show at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. It's in Philadelphia through July 7th. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to play another clip. It's actually a webisode from The Office, but I'm curious whether in some of the emails or letters that you got, whether you heard from alcoholics who were mad at you for your portrayal, for portraying a drunk.
I have never, I've never been shamed in this
really?
Character. Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, right?
It is.
If I have managed to offend someone, they have not gotten off their ass and decided to write me or pursue it. So I'm happy about that.
But do you think that's just because it was Meredith and somehow?
I think there's a spirit that actually is accepting of this. I mean, having grown up with, the alcoholic at the bar, and just knowing
sure.
what that beast is, I think, and just kind of understanding my dad having a compassion for it and being of service in his own way and not shaming. I don't know. I'd like to think that, there's some energy in that isn't judging this character,
Let me play another scene. And again, this is a webisode. And this is Dunder Mifflin Accountants Oscar, played by Oscar Martinez. Kevin, who's played by Brian Baumgarten, and Angela, played by Angela Martin, corner you, Meredith, about missing money in an early Office webisode. This was an online episode between seasons 2 and 3. Let's listen.
Did you use any company money for anything? We're just trying to balance the books.
Please. If I stole $3,000, I wouldn't be here. I'd be on a beach in Jamaica drinking Red Stripe.
Oh, I love Red Stripe.
I do too. That's Jamaican beer?
Yeah. We should go out and get a beer after work. Or, hey, you want to go right now?
It's 11:15.
Yeah? So that's too early?
You didn't take any money at all. You're sure?
Yes. I'm a single mom. I would never do anything to jeopardize my kid.
I thought you had two kids.
My ex-husband took Wendy. A good one.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Sure.
Thanks, Meredith.
You guys want to get that beer?
That's a webisode, episode of The Office. Can I just say how much I love the Kevin character? I loved the Kevin character.
He's very, very funny. I mean, what a strangely dumb guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hilarious.
Did you know Scranton? I mean, before you went to Scranton, Pennsylvania?
I went to Scranton to visit a friend of mine from high school, because I went to Catholic high school. I went to Carroll, and I did have a friend who was a little older than me who went to Scranton, and we went up to visit her. So I had done some underage drinking in Scranton.
Oh, did you really?
I did. Just briefly. Yeah, so and obviously we've been back a few times with the show. We had an Office convention 4 years ago, and that was a total trip. And then we were just there in May, which was completely surreal. And may I say, what a great time we had, but not a lot of security, I got to tell you. I was making jokes like, not a lot of security in Scranton. I think I'm pregnant. I'm just kidding. Shook a lot of hands, got to tell you. But it was great. It was fantastic, really. And I'm always like pleasantly surprised by the people who, there was someone who came from Ireland. There's some people that drove from Canada. I mean, this show, people feel very, very connected to it. I'm so glad we did that. It was a great kind of last hurrah. And it actually made it harder to say goodbye to my actor friends, because it was even once again another like bonding experience for all of us.
Well, I would think being part of an ensemble cast, you probably get that at Second City and some of the other,
absolutely,
you know, improv things that you've done. But to be part of an ensemble has got
to... It's great. Yeah. I mean, I'm so lucky because, you know, as I wrote in my HuffPost piece, every actor thinks that they want to be the main course. Everybody wants to be the star. Luckily, I got this job at the age of 40, so I could actually really appreciate that I wasn't even a side dish. I was the onions. And I feel like that's a great thing because there's something about kind of understanding your place in the whole thing, and that there is no competition, that what I have is different from everybody else's, and that it's equally, maybe not equally, but it all works together, and that's how it all works. So it's been the greatest gift.
Well, onions are pretty tasty.
Right.
I mean, they can, you know, make a burger, right?
That's what I think, right? Make or break your meal, right? Your life meal. Yeah, it's fantastic.
As I said, you know, you grew up in the Philadelphia area. The youngest, I guess, by just a couple of minutes,
yes,
of six. You have six siblings, so you're the youngest of,
yes,
seven.
Yeah, and I have a twin sister, but we're not identical. Susie and I are not identical. Yeah. But she's very, everybody's really funny.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to. That's
kind of funny. I mean,
yeah. No, I mean, you know, I'm hilarious. No, my sister Susie is funnier than me, though, for sure. For sure. She's, you know, she's got it coming and going. I hope that I'm not like holding people hostage with my humor, but it does happen from time to time. I'm sorry to say, can't turn it off. But, you know, I think that's a cultural thing, too. And the Irish, you know.
Storytelling,
keeping it light, just, you know, yeah, or making fun of yourself before someone else beats you to it, right? I mean, that's the thing.
So Thanksgiving at your household, a lot of
jibber-jabber? Oh yeah, funerals. When you're crazy, I mean, there's always something to find, something. Yeah, yeah. I think Frank Rizzo came to my Irish grandmother's funeral. I have no idea what he was doing there. I think it was right before his election, and he was sort of making the rounds, and I remember my cousin making it, you know, like a joke, like, hey, he and mama, I'm real tight. I mean, you know, it's like, it's ridiculous, but you know, it's, there's always something. I don't know. I feel like that's part of our survival skills. And it's also, that's one of the greatest things about being a part of a comedy. So many times we'll get letters from people who say, like, you know what, my son was going through cancer, and the only time we really laughed was watching The Office. I feel like, oh my God, like that is, I mean, I know, you know, obviously curing cancer is more important than making people laugh during cancer, but it is nice to be a part of the solution and to have that soft place to land. I mean, it's really an honor.
Do you think being the youngest, I mean, even by a couple of minutes, that being the youngest of a large family sort of helped create your humor?
Yeah, I think I'm more of an observer than some of my older siblings who are sort of more in the thick of it. We had a little more distance, I think. And yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also you get like all these different parenting styles when people are in charge of you and you're like, not working for me. That works for me. Don't like that. Okay. Don't want to do that. Don't want to make that mistake. I'm not going to do what she just did because that's a... Oh,
did you get away with anything because you were the youngest?
A little bit, yeah, but I wasn't super, you know, I mean, you know, I had my showbiz dreams. I don't know. You know, I was fairly benign, you know, not going too crazy.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Kate Flannery in this hour of Radio Times. As I said, she's appearing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the Suzanne Roberts Theater, a production of the Philadelphia Theater Company. Performance is actually this afternoon at 1 and tonight. It runs through July 7th. And we've been talking a lot about The Office because she played alcoholic Meredith Palmer in The Office. And we're also talking about her experiences growing up here in Philadelphia. Also want to talk about Second City and some of the other things that she's been doing as well. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
This July 4th, the stars come out to celebrate America's biggest birthday party at Capitol 4th 2013. Join me, Corva Coleman, and onstage host Tom Bergeron to hear the legendary Barry Manilow, plus special guest Neil Diamond, the National Symphony Orchestra, and more. Live from the U.S. Capitol. Don't miss at Capitol 4th 2013 from NPR Music.
Tomorrow night at 8 on WHYY.
Who are you?
I'm Peggy Olson, the new girl.
That's Elizabeth Moss as Peggy Olson and John Hamm as Don Draper in their first scene together on Mad Men. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Elizabeth Moss about how Peggy has changed over the past six seasons. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The death of the Defense of Marriage Act could mean the start of a new life for one transnational gay couple.
Now we're treated like everybody else, which is all anybody wanted in the first place.
The first gay couple approved for a green card petition. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you're just joining us, Kate Flannery is our guest. She was born and raised here in the Philadelphia area. She hails from a large Irish-American family, one of seven children. She attended high school in Radnor, in fact, a graduate of Archbishop John Carroll High School. She also attended the University of the Arts, graduated from the University of the Arts, and is now back in her home city appearing in the new play, Love, Loss, and What I Wore. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. So where do you think you got this acting performing bug?
I think, well, my dad has a great sense of humor, and I feel like he used to use the bar as kind of a stage in his own way. Just perfect timing. He'd have a few zingers, and you watch the master. You watch the master and you learn.
But you have great physical comedy. I mean, even just talking to you, you're gesturing. Your face is.
I'm playing in the back of the house, Marty.
Come you to have the to project, yeah. Right?
Also, it's interesting, you know, doing a play right now. When I learned so much about getting things very subtle and very small in the office. The first couple seasons, that was always like the note, like bring it down. Yeah. Just because it was a new medium. I mean, I'd only done a little bit of TV, and obviously when you do theater, you know, and I have a comedy act called The Lampshades, and I perform that regularly, and sometimes that can be broad depending on the, you know, how many people are in the house, and we're like a dying lounge act, and you know, there's a whole thing that happens.
A lot of those, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, what I like about The Lampshades is that it's something that I write, and I get to do with there's just two of us on stage, and at one point, you know, I have too much energy, and my partner in The Lampshades has not enough. And he has a drink and a cigarette at all times. So I have a foil. So there's a contrast. And my character is obviously in love with him, and he doesn't know it. And he passes out with a cigarette in his mouth at one point. And you sort of see, I don't say anything, but you feel the angst. And I try to sing, you know, the song Close to You, and I can't quite get through it. It's like a lot of, you know.
And your partner is Scott Robinson, yes. Right? So how did you two hook up?
Well, we met at the Annoyance Theater in Chicago. We had both taken class at Second City. He ended up directing at Second City, and then I was in the touring company. And then we started to do it. We went to a club in Chicago called the Green Mill, and I love making fun of singers that take themselves too seriously. It's just one thing. I don't know why I'm the person that really. It's a pot shot, and I just go for it every time. So, you know, that sort of over-emotional, self-important, self-indulgent, masturbatory singers that, yeah.
So and overdo everything?
Yeah, or just, like, make everything feel like, you know, they're, once again, like they're curing cancer. It's ridiculous. The thing about the Lampshades is that Scott can't really sing harmony. So we do two songs at the same time. He can do that. So our weakness has become our strength. So we sing Mandy and Brandy at the same time. Yes, it's an older jukebox. It's like the 70s and the 80s. We do a medley called PBS where I sing a Mr. Rogers song while he sings Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing. And then we get to a Sesame Street song. I mean, it's very like, it's musically interesting because as we know, Bad Lounge, you get about 30 seconds. Yeah. And then we all get the joke and then go home. But the Lampshades actually have, there's something else going on. And also just kind of like, there's this relationship that's going on at stage where we are literally doing an act for years, and you, the audience, feels that like we're dealing with the audience in real time, doing an act. So it's kind of fun. And actually, my partner Scott was on The Office on the second to last episode. He played the bartender at Poor Richard's when we're fighting about watching the documentary for the first time. So I was so happy that he actually got to be on the show, because so many of the writers and the directors and the actors have seen The Lampshade. So it was kind of nice to kind of, you know, for me, like, to feel like, yes, it's like a full circle moment.
Well, as you said, this grew out of the Annoyance Theater, which I guess grew out of Second City.
Actually, the teacher, our director, Mick Napier, was from Second City, and that's how we all met. And then he started, and that's, we started to do the Real Life Brady Bunch at the Annoyance, and Jane Lynch was in that. And I worked with her and Andy Richter, and we all sort of had like an amazing adventure. And I will say, Second City, I don't even think we realized at the time that we were sort of, there was a whole crop of people that came out when I was there. Steve Carell, of course, Stephen Colbert, Nia Vardalos, Amy Sedaris. And, you know, I'm actually good friends with Nia Vardalos, and we have sort of a different connection now, but we really appreciate having that history. And there's a bunch of Chicago friends that I have right now that are, you know, it's sort of like we're not in competition with each other. There's a lot of support. There's a lot of understanding. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of love. And it's kind of great, because sometimes LA can sort of feel like an island of, you know, of a kind of like Lord of the Flies, where you feel like people are really, they're going to step over your dying corpse so that they can, you know, get what you have or what they think you have.
Well, one of your shows is the Miss Vagina Pageant. And I have to say, I Googled it, and while your piece came up, so did a bunch of other things.
That's
so
funny. Well, you know, Jane Lynch and I sang, she was actually the understudy for that show, which is hilarious considering she's a big star. But we, I did a song called If Wishes Were Rainbow, So Am I, Miss Pennsylvania's, you know, her talent competition. And Jane and I, actually, you can see us, we sing it, it's online. We did a benefit for breast cancer a few years ago, where we did this Fiddler on the Roof song. It's actually like a bongo drum version of Far From the Home I Love. You can see it on YouTube as well. But they wouldn't let us sing it on TV Guide because they wouldn't pay for the rights for Fiddler on the Roof song. I guess it's expensive. I don't know. So we ended up doing If Wishes Were Rainbow, So Am I together on the TV Guide show. So that's, if anyone's so inclined, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. I think it's called The 411 or something. But yeah,
well,
Jane is so great. Yeah, yeah.
She is great.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's sort of like all roads lead back to, I mean, I feel like everything is cumulative. So everything you get is sort of like, oh my gosh, there's just these great paths. I mean, things have worked out very nicely for myself. If I did get hit by the Tasty Cake truck, I would be fine. You know, really. I hope not. Yeah. Because I don't know if they'll get free Tasty Cakes. That's my sister Susie's idea anyway, not mine. And she wrote a paper about that at Temple. Yeah.
And she went to Temple?
She went to Temple Graduate School, yeah.
And you went to you graduated from the University
of
New York?
Yes, and I actually just got an alumni award there, which was totally surreal. I was at the commencement in May, and it was the day of the last episode of The Office, so I literally ran from the commencement, got on a plane to sit with everybody.
Oh my goodness.
It was fantastic. So surreal. I have to say, I kind of feel like they gave the award to Meredith and not to me, and I'm happy about that. It's fantastic, really.
So did you study theater?
I did. I did.
With the thought that you would be an actress?
Yes. Yes.
And you are.
And I am. I was not like a superstar at school, though, I will tell you. I mean, I did not. It's funny. I remember not getting certain parts and being smaller parts in shows and having the director say, I underestimated you. I actually heard that a couple times. I was like, so I don't know if my audition skills were not fantastic or who knows. But again, it's not a punishment if you get a smaller part. It's just an opportunity to sort of like work a little harder. So, you know, it's life is interesting. It's good. And again, it's like, you know, as Abraham Lincoln says, most people are as happy as they make up their minds to be.
Did he say that?
He did say that. And some people don't think of actors as people, but we can be. You know, obviously, you know, that's one of the things that sometimes actors who work a lot like to complain. And, you know, it's a choice. It's a choice. I mean, it's a quality problem that we have here, right?
I'm curious about, because you did do some comedy, I guess, in Philly after you graduated. And this was a while ago.
I was in a comedy group when I first graduated. And then I've been back with the Lampshades a few times at Healy. And we've been back for like the last three years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we will, and I'm sure we'll be back at some time this year, you know, next year and a half. But, you know, I'm doing the new Our Front play. And I thought, you know what, I need to just focus on this piece while I'm here and not, you know, and it's a great piece, and it's a great cast. I'm really enjoying who's here with us, and I feel like even when I did the show in New York, I did it with Loretta Swit and Didi Khan, which was totally surreal, because I'm huge fans of both of theirs. And this is I don't know. I feel like the fit is a little bit better for what we're doing. And I'm doing actually different stories than I did in New York, which is fun too. I mean, Nora Ephron and Delia, they're such great writers, and I know it's a very female centric piece, but men have come and actually had a good time, believe it or not. I mean, because it's so smart. And it's kind of this opportunity for us to, as women, to sort of really kind of analyze in a very funny and smart way kind of how we always seem to thread clothes and jewelry and
life.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's weird, but they're kind of inseparable for us. And we don't always get to express that because, you know, it's a man's world sometimes.
Have you ever done serious acting? And by that, I mean serious parts.
You know what? It's been a while since I've done a drama. I actually, I was on the show. Oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking out. It was Boomtown. Oh. I was actually Neil McDonough's secretary, and that was a drama on NBC, and it was supposed to be a recurring character. And I remember getting called about the second episode that I was going to do, and then I got a call saying that the show was canceled.
Oh dear. So you had a little taste of that.
Yeah. That was maybe a year before The Office. So again, a great thing, because if I was locked into, you know, obviously all roads lead to good things. That's good.
I read that you teach Shakespeare to kids.
I did, actually.
Or did?
I did. I don't anymore. That was the first season of The Office. I was actually the musical director at the Los Angeles Drama Club.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's funny now because that group of people, they're still teaching, and they have a lot of like famous kids of famous actors now, or famous, like, because I know Matt Weiner, from the producer of the creator of Mad Men, his kids go there. And I know Matt a little bit, just from, believe it or not, from like being at award shows. This is like so surreal. But you know, so he knows that, you know, I have a connection to them. And then I think Jeremy Piven's niece goes there. I mean, there's a lot of people that go to the Los Angeles Drama Club. It was a great, great thing for me. It was a great way to give back. And, you know, we used to end every show with Brush Up Your Shakespeare. I teach these kids a little song from Kiss Me Kate, you know, a little vaudeville with the Shakespeare, just a little, you know, shake it up.
Now you can, I've heard you sing. You can sing.
I can sing. Actually, I briefly sang in a band in New York with John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants. And Mary Birdsong actually sang in that band as well.
Who's in the production.
And she's in the production of Love Lost and What I Wore. So, yeah, and we've worked together since. She's been on Reno 911. She's done The Lampshade. She's played my sister in The Lampshade.
It's very incestuous when you think about it.
It is. But we're having a good time. Why not? But, yeah, and so I do enjoy singing, but I don't like to take myself too seriously. Actually, and Mary and I we recently worked at that same breast cancer benefit, and we did a duet, the Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand duet of Happy Days Are Here Again. We really have a lot of nerve covering that. That's a little too iconic. I really think I was hit in the head before I decided to do that. That was not a good idea.
Do you get nervous before performing?
I do.
Even comedy?
You know what?
The Lampshades?
No, not so much The Lampshades, because it's almost a ritual at this point. Even though every show is different, but there's still something in my body that always knows that I know where I am, I know where I'm going, even if I'm in a different neighborhood, I know where I'm going. But yeah, I think singing without a character is always like, I have to sort of assume something to hang on to, because otherwise then I'm actually up for real scrutiny.
Oh, then it's you, right?
Right?
Not the character?
How dare you? Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like there's nothing.
It's
to
a good
hide
defense,
behind.
Isn't it? Not
absolutely, but I think that's also what I enjoy about marrying comedy and music, because it doesn't take itself too seriously. And if you get something more out of it, fantastic. If you understand more layers that we put in, great. But if you don't, I'm not standing there, you know, bleeding on the stage, waiting for your love.
I do want to play one more scene from The Office, and this is you as Meredith Palmer in the last season, season 9, reflecting on your years, documented on video at Dunder Mifflin. Let's listen.
I just feel lucky that I got a chance to share my crummy story with anyone out there who thinks they're the only one to take a dump in a paper shredder. You're not alone, sister. Let's get a beer sometime.
Ouch. We were so ambivalent about playing that clip, because it's just disgusting.
Disgusting. It is. But moving.
But it's
moving
fun to say those, like, you know, be bad.
It's
like
so
that.
Fantastic. I just feel like the writers, I hope that I have close to that experience again, because it's such a rare, super rare. I mean, it's a lottery. It really is.
I mean, that's a pretty high bar, too. I would
it
think
is.
Having spent, what, 9 seasons
yeah.
in the... In
yeah,
the
and
show
I was just
like
saying,
that.
What's so interesting, too, is like kind of not knowing which way the character was going. And, you know, and then season four, like getting hit by that car was like, okay, we're off. We're, I don't know where we were before, but we have taken off. This is happening. But also kind of understanding that every contribution makes up the whole. Sure. And trusting. I mean, and, you know, and I'm lucky because some people might be in that situation and it might have never, they may not have never had a season four. They may have never gotten hit by, you know, Michael Scott's car.
Lucky them. But I wonder whether, you know, looking ahead, are you going to get parts that are essentially Meredith Palmer, only just with a different name?
And
whether you would want to stay away from that, you know?
Well, this is the thing. I feel like I'm lucky enough that I don't feel like I ever my character outwore her welcome. And I feel like there's still many things that you don't know about Meredith. Mm-hmm. So I feel like in that respect, I'm hopefully not going to be as typecast as someone who may have had more of the heavy lifting on the show. Because I think that's a bigger burden as you move on. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe I won't be red anymore. I don't know. I might go crazy. But, you know, I feel like the possibilities are really vast, and I feel like the future is bright. As a woman I'm still in my 40s, just barely, just celebrated 49 years of my twin sister this month. Woohoo! But I feel like I have an interesting potential because of that. And I don't know. And we've also worked with so many fantastic directors in the office, so I feel like
somebody out there, perhaps.
Yeah, and also just kind of like learning how to adapt to those different styles and kind of understand like that deeper level. Because, you know, Paul Feig, who directed The Heat and Bridesmaids, he actually worked a lot on our show. He directed that episode where the Moroccan Christmas, where Meredith gets her hair on fire and Michael Scott drags her to rehab. And he actually let us just go. Like, we were in that parking lot. There was really no dialogue in that scene. He just was like, let's create something right now. And I, you know, that was unusual because usually everything was really, really scripted. And I love that he trusted us and he figured out how to get, you know, just get it to that crazy part. And then there were two people dressed exactly like us in the parking lot out of the corner of our eye in case one of us got hurt.
Well, Kate Flannery, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for Meredith, too.
Thank you so much.
It's an
honor.
It's a pleasure for us as well. Kate Flannery here in Philadelphia, her hometown, appearing in Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the Suzanne Roberts Theater, a production of the Philadelphia Theater Company, and it runs through July 7th. In fact, there's a performance this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Come on down.
I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. You can go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and we've posted some pictures of Kate Flannery on our Facebook page. Stay with us. We'll be right back.